It's Wednesday. It's Bob McCown. It's John Shannon. Welcome back. Baseball conversation today. Bob Elliott, ex of the Toronto Sun. Dave Hodge, well, needs no introduction. The two of them will join us, and we will talk about baseball in general and the Blue Jays specifically when this program begins after these messages. Dave Hodge is with us, and Bob Elliott, as we address the baseball situation. And Hodge, I have to, Shannon told me that you spend all of your time watching baseball, paying attention to baseball. It is your love of the moment. Is that, first of all, is that accurate?
Love of my life, if you really want to know the truth. I did work at hockey for a long time, but that didn't mean I couldn't love something else a little bit more when I wasn't working, because we got to love something else than work. And my love of baseball makes this quite an occasion to be talking baseball with Mr. Elliott. So good morning, Bob,
I worked at it. Yeah, thank you.
Only folks, Dave's already trying to be the host, Bob.
Well, that's all right. He's got plenty of experience at doing that kind of stuff. I'm happy to defer, Mr. Hodge, if you would care to take over the entire conversation.
No, I'm pleased that you would acknowledge that, and that Mr. Shannon would file that charge against me. But anyway.
Now, are you a baseball fan or are you a Blue Jay fan? Because you would understand that there is a difference.
Very much a baseball fan. But yes, I watch the Blue Jays more than any other team. Why not? And apart from watching baseball, I'm a fantasy baseball nut. I'm in a league that spans the country, and I think the other 11 league managers might be the best, among the best baseball experts in the country. So it's tough to keep up, and I will try to do the same today in the exalted company of Mr. Elliott. There I go again.
Jump in, Elliott. You can say, nah, it's Bob.
Well, I have a question, Robert.
All right, go ahead.
You've always been the wisest man in the room, any room that I've been in. But We go back to before there was a fan. So tell me this. Why can people not play golf today?
It's a great question. I don't have the answer to it. It's driving me crazy. I never sign petitions or things that are sent around because I just don't think they mean very much. But I got somebody sent me online a petition to sign about opening the golf courses. Did my homework, found out that no COVID cases, not a single COVID case was traced back to golf last year. The busiest golf year in the province of Ontario in history, more rounds played. And so I signed that petition. And to date, the august premier of the province has completely and utterly ignored it. So, Elliott, I have no answer for you.
Well, I'm not a golfer either, but unless there's proof of the contagious, why aren't kids playing baseball? They aren't going to be able to for a couple of months outside.
Well, I don't dispute that either. I didn't know this was going to be the conversation, but I mean, you can argue that in baseball, in a normal setting, the kids get close together. Golf, it's not that way. I mean, first, you're outside, and secondly, you don't even ride in the same golf cart with somebody. And if you do, there's a panel between you, a plastic panel between you. Everybody stays socially distant. You don't touch the flagpole. They have these Don't touch the flagpole. They have these little things that sit in cups that sit in the cup, and you take your putter and you flick it up. It's got a little handle on it. You flick it up, and the ball pops out, and you pick up your golf ball.
How many years have you been golfing, McCown? How many years have you been golfing?
About as long as you've been alive, Shannon.
Okay. How many times have you ever called it a flagpole?
What would you call it?
A stick, isn't it?
A pin.
Stick?
Pin, yeah, you're right.
The pin is in.
All right, well, whatever. You're really going to pick on me for that? Can we get to
baseball? Yeah, I am, because you basically, you've already lost control of this show.
Well, with you three morons, I've never had it.
I will. I'll give you a bigger issue than this. Not to put golfers down, but imagine the Leafs in the Stanley Cup final and the Blue Jays a little later hosting the Yankees in a wild card game. Where are those games going to be played? And will the government officials, provincial and federal, be allowing any fans in the stands if those games are played in Toronto? That's going to be your headline. And I think it's up to the Leafs and the Jays to get that far, but look out back and forth on that.
Well, and I don't dispute that, the premise of your point, Dave, but isn't the issue more about allowing American-based franchises, teams to cross the border? I mean, we're not at the, that's really the issue right now. There's no talking about whether fans are in the stands or not. They just won't get those people across the border.
Should the first thing happen and the Leafs and the Jays be playing in Toronto, then the bigger issue, I think, is going to be whether fans can go to the games in any numbers. We're looking down the road months. Who knows what the situation will be, but I think both teams have the potential to be where I suggested they might be. And then collect your opinions and share them.
So, Mr. Hodge, were you the premier of the province of Ontario, which is an intriguing thought in and of itself, would you allow hockey teams, baseball teams, 4 more years to cross the border and play here?
Which doctors am I consulting?
Well, you can Dr. Vinny Bumbatsa if you want, or you can consult your own private physician down there in Grimsby, who I'm sure is a fine doctor, but I don't care. Pick one. Make a decision. Well, you're the premier.
My decision will be based on the science of the moment and as it should have been all along. And it's as simple as that, or as complicated as that, if you wish. But, there's going to be a whole lot of pressure from various directions. If the Jays can be at the Rogers Centre with the roof open and in the playoffs, that there be some fans in the stands. The Jays are going to want it. The fans are going to want it. Major League Baseball is going to have a tough time saying no to that when there's fans in every U.S. ballpark. So, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So let's talk whether the Jays can be in the playoffs. Yes.
There he goes again. He's taken over again. Bobby Bonilla has complete control.
I checked the agenda, and that was question number one.
It was the premise. It was the premise of this entire conversation. It just got railroaded on.
Man, you got an agenda? I didn't get one.
Yeah, I always need one.
Read your email. And if we didn't set one, it got
just
lost.
Just so you know, Bob Elliott, Dave always needs an agenda. Trust me. Go. After 40 years, he needs. Do we have a meeting? Yeah, we'll have a meeting. Do we have a plan? Yes, we have a plan.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking baseball, and we're talking about the Blue Jays. Go, Bob McCown.
Well, all right, so to answer Hodge's question, I mean, I guess the answer to that question is still to be seen. And how do we even evaluate that, given the extraordinary number of injuries that this team not only has suffered, but apparently continues to suffer, the absence of Springer for virtually the entire season and all the other stuff that's gone on. Elliot, chime in here. Can you even possibly make an assessment of how good this team is or could be?
Well, I think things will be better, Robert, once they finish the extension on their new facility there that was supposed to eliminate all injuries little bit of property they built in Dunedin. I have some numbers here. So soft tissue injuries, strains, pulls, hamstrings. On May 10th in 2019, it was 66, okay, in the whole all of baseball. This year, there's 118. People on the DL in 2019, because we can't use last year because it wasn't a May 10th last year, it was 194. This year, there's 315. Like, it's not just the Blue Jays, in all seriousness, it's everywhere. And the best explanation I heard was Dan O'Dowd the other day. He said that when baseball was shut down last year and they didn't know when they were going to start this year, is it spring training, is that everybody went to their workout guy or their trainer, and they worked extra hard and everything. So now they're fit to run the cross country or to play soccer or whatever, but they don't have baseball muscles. You know, like the catchers are getting a pulled hamstring from blocking a ball in the dirt. Alexander Kirk is getting a pulled hamstring from running out a foul ball. You know, you got very, like, you don't get anybody, you can't practice getting a break on a ball in the left center field gap. You can't practice those things.
I'll tell you what you can do is make better decisions than the Jays have done in a couple of cases. George Springer should not have played a game unless he was ready to play in the outfield. And the Jays are suffering, and so is Springer, for the decision to ease him into the lineup as a DH when he wasn't fully ready to play, to swing a bat, run the bases. They're, you know, he's a valuable property, and they've cost themselves the use of George Springer to this point, except for a couple of homers. And they can only hope that he can come back fully healthy, and they better wait until then. Also, recently in a game that they were trailing by 5 runs in the 8th inning, Rafael Dolis, arguably the closer, or Dolis Romano is the closer duo, comes into a game in the 8th inning down by 5 runs. And I'm guessing when he was told to get up and throw in the bullpen, he probably wasn't fully ready because he was thinking, they're not bringing me into this game. And now he's on the injured list. I have no idea why Dolis would be used in that situation. So there's two valuable players on the IL. And I think decisions made by the Jays are the reason for both.
Well, I'm not disputing in any way what you're saying, David. I would say, though, that of greater concern is Elliott's initial point. And we spent some time talking to the president of the Blue Jays about this. The millions, tens of millions, maybe $100 million that were spent on the new facility in Dunedin, which is visually extravagant, impressive.
Even though they took Bobby Maddox's name off it.
Yeah, well, I know that makes me mad too. But what has it done? I mean, is this the right approach? Are these guys being overtrained or poorly trained? Are baseball muscles different than other muscles? We are all old enough to remember the pre-steroid days when most baseball players were mesomorphs. They were normal kind of looking guys. They were not bulked up necessarily. Mm-hmm. You had guys that were quick, fast, who could steal bases and whatever, but you didn't have guys who were in, you know, athletic, real athletic shape. Guys, Dave, Bob, you both know, players would come to camp to get in shape. Now they're expected to come to camp in shape. And I just wonder whether the human body can be in shape for that long a period of time. It needs some degree of rest. And are these guys getting it? Is there an answer in all of this diatribe? Anybody?
Well, every team is suffering the same thing. You know, the injured lists are crazy. The length of them on every team. And so I don't know. It's baseball for some reason is tough to play these days with anything wrong with you. You know, name the last player that did an interview and after a game and said, you know, yeah, I had a couple of hits and but I'm playing hurt. Like nobody plays hurt. And maybe should they? I don't know. But the least little twinge or pain or soreness, you know, guys are going on the injured list because they're sore. Our team's being too careful. I don't know.
The agents are overprotective.
Well, I was going to say.
And as you made the point, David, about the post-game interview, like, don't you wish that they had that shampoo and the pie in the face when you were doing it and the guy's answering?
Yeah, nobody's having that kind of fun anymore.
But but doesn't this speak to how expensive the game has gotten? You know, the players aren't going to risk their health anymore because the amount of money they make. And then you look at the extremes of the sport, the 100-mile-an-hour pitcher now. I mean, this game wasn't designed. Maybe it wasn't designed to be pitching the ball 100 miles an hour. And the fact that it's become a home run hitting event, was it designed to be completely about home runs and 100 mile an hour pitches? And is the body ready for those kind of things?
Well, I'll tell you what, the body isn't ready to be hit by one of those 100 mile an hour pitches on the wrist or the hand or the forearm. And for years, I have wondered why baseball didn't try to do something about those injuries. That's like part of the game. Well, it used to be part of the game when the quarterback had hit in the head and they stopped that. It used to be part of the game when hockey players got low bridged and their knees were destroyed and they basically got rid of that. And baseball just shrugs their shoulders and watches star players take a pitch off the hand and be lost for 6 or 8 weeks, and you know, a pinch runner goes to first base, and that's the end of that. I mean, I would try to do something about those injuries, which really are significant. And you're right, John. You know, if they're throwing that hard, you better not get hit by one of them.
Excellent point, David. I remember when we were in Minnesota once, and Donaldson made the point. He said they've cleaned up second base. Nobody can get hurt at second base on a double play. Nobody can get hurt at the plate. There aren't any collisions, but he says, guys can still hit me in the hand and it's fine. Go ahead. You know, the guy doesn't even get kicked out. And even if he does, what's that punishment? And I broke a hammock bone or something, or all those little bones in the back of the hand. You know, he's gone for 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, and then the question is, you know, what do you do about it? And I don't have an answer that says much can be done about it, but I threw this one at Beeston one day, and he actually thought it was worth taking to Commissioner Manfred. And you're going to laugh, but he didn't. Maybe the commissioner did. I think you get hit by a pitch, not on the foot, grazing your shoe or your jersey flutters. But if you get hit like that and you know, you're obviously, I mean, two bases instead of one. Now, as they say, it's not much, but it's something. And the pitcher, especially, you know, if you've got the bases loaded, you better not plunk a guy or watch those runners, two of them, come home. I think it is at least something. And you'd also have to have the umpires, you know, police the batter so that nobody just stands there and allows himself to be hit. But to do nothing is to ignore a real problem for the players, for the game, for the fans. And I wish they would address it. They just ignore it.
Well, with due respect, what I'm seeing is a completely different era. We're always concerned about injuries. Do we think the pitchers are actually dusting players? off the plate? Because I would say to you that we have all seen an era where guys throwing at batters was a strategic part of the game. It was done deliberately, it was done intentionally, and it was every once in a while you'd get a brawl, but usually if it was thrown at somebody's head. Who was the Montreal Expo guy who got hit?
Ron Hunt.
It happened once or twice a week.
And well, he wanted it to happen.
Well, sure, he would lean into pitches. I guess
that's on the umpire. It should be.
Well, I don't see it as you guys see that there's a problem with pitchers throwing at hitters and trying to move them back off.
I think some guys are throwing at guys, and I also think guys are being rushed with big arms at 100 miles an hour. They don't know where it's going,
right?
And
they just put them in there.
A guy, like David said, a guy gets hit in the foot with a breaking ball or a changeup. That wouldn't count to me for a two base penalty. But you ding a guy up in here, or it's, you know, that's a dangerous area. You know, like going up in the head there.
And I'm not suggesting that the umpire has to decide whether it's intentional or not. I don't care. You can accidentally hit a player in the wrist and put him out for eight weeks, and you got to be responsible for that. That's a lack of control. That's, you know, we saw Nate Pearson not know where home plate was and throwing it 100 miles an hour. Bob's right. Sometimes these guys are up there without any command, and the batters can be the victim. So, there are things that obviously that should be things that can be done to reduce the number of injuries in baseball. And we're talking about several examples here. But the sport is really suffering if the star players have to. Now you got, you know, half the San Diego Padres on the COVID list. So, you know, you add that as well. It's a problem.
But don't you think the fundamental problem here is that pitchers are expected to throw 95 miles an hour? They are bred to throw 95 miles an hour. It means their careers are going to be shorter. It means they can't throw as many innings. When you throw as hard as you can all the time, you're going to walk more people as well as strike out more people. You are going to throw more balls than you are, or as many balls as you are strikes in most cases. So games are longer. All the things that we don't like about baseball, that baseball is trying to correct, I guess, seem to me to be the result of one thing. And that is attention to velocity of the pitch.
Well, and also the number of different pitches. I mean, Bob Elliott, you know, how many pitches did Tom Seaver have or Bob Gibson have? You know, these guys with six and seven different pitches.
I would say three,
I can't think that's great for the arm.
Gibson. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, you know, and we talk about velocity, and this is one I don't think there's an answer for.
Excuse me, Bob. Yeah. You say velo. I mean, if you're going to talk about baseball, you got to get into the hip, you know, the verbiage.
Velo. Are you going to correct me?
Everybody talks about velo. Yeah, I am. Because you've lost control.
Well, I knew I had you here for some reason. At least we've now discovered what it is.
And to hold the flag stick.
Thank you.
I prefer, Bob, I prefer velocity. Sorry, John.
Thank you.
I prefer
otherwise, we're going to be talking about pitchers on the bump and catchers in the squad.
So explain, you know, I want you to explain this to me. Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens could throw it as hard as almost anybody that plays the game today. Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens threw 300 innings in a year. 250 would be a fairly light season. Would throw 8, 10, 15 complete games in a year. This is not possible with the pitchers today that throw at this velocity. Why?
Well, I don't think it's the manager's decision. I don't think it's the pitcher's decision. It's upstairs. Kevin Millar, I remember Dave Roberts, where the Dodgers are in the World Series, and they're just hammering him after taking out Alex Wood or whoever it was after 60 or 70 pitches. And he said, that's unfair to make the manager go up there and answer the questions when it wasn't his decision. It should be the guys from upstairs who made the decision. And it's the same with this team here. Montoya, they are not all Montoya's decision.
I don't, I'm not suggesting they are.
Like Bezio hitting leadoff last year, I remember there was a real goofy one and somebody else was hitting eighth, a better hitter. But they go on matchups, which I don't know. You know, as far as I know, the team wasn't undefeated.
Well, and part of the other thing that you're kind of alluding to here is this philosophy in baseball that you don't want your starting pitcher to face a batting order for a third time. Yep. Let me ask you something. If you were going to get to Roger Clemens, what inning is it were you most likely to get to?
First.
That is the correct answer. And it's indisputable that if you were going to get to Roger Clemens, you better get to him in the first inning, because after that, he was going to get in a groove and you weren't going to touch him. And it didn't matter if you faced him three or four times or five times in a game. I think five times would be unlikely because you'd have to give a bunch of hits and he didn't give up many. But, you know, for every reason they give us for why they are doing things, it's not hard to find a counterintuitive argument and say, well, explain this then, if that's the case. David?
No, if you wanted a pitcher to pitch a complete game, first of all, you're going to have to tell him that, and you're going to have to get him to be prepared to do that. And on one hand, in Major League Baseball, there's Shane Bieber, Jake DeGrom, you know, a few pitchers that go out there and intend to go all the way. Most of the other ones are trying to go five innings to be credited with a win if they're leading, or six, seven would be a real bonus. So they're out there in the first and second and third innings, realizing that they're, you know, they're halfway home. And maybe it's a philosophy that has to change that says, you know, we want to train guys to go all the way. The other thing is, you know, there's so many guys in the bullpen, and it is said to be so valuable to, you know, to keep bringing relievers in and have the batters face different pitchers, that if there are that many down there, you're going to use them, and the starting pitcher knows that too. So I would say, hey, let's try to return to the days of complete games and find pitchers who can do it. But I don't think anybody's making that search now.
Here, here, I'm with you. I've long been a proponent of the four-man rotation, and I don't think we're going to get there again, but I sure would like
Speaking of Mr. Elliott mentioned Craig Biggio. I'm not being too hard on the Jays here, I hope, because I think they've done a really good job being where they are with all that they faced. And I think that potentially they are a playoff team, as I've said.
You do?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, sure.
You do think they're a playoff team?
Yeah. You know, I mean, maybe they don't win the division, or maybe they do, but I think they can be one of the second place teams. Wow. Or third, if, you know, I say Jays host Yankees, could be two teams from the same division in the wild card. But Bob, you mentioned Biggio. For a handful of years, did we not think that the infield combo for the Jays was going to be Bichette at short and Biggio at second base? What happened to that? And what in the world happened that made somebody think Kevin Biggio should be at third base?
Their rationale was that Semien was a shortstop and he'd be better in the middle, and Bichette had short, so they gave him a second.
Well, how many shortstops have moved to third base? Lots.
Yes.
How many second basemen have moved to third base?
Very few.
Not as many come off the top of my head as.
See, I think Semien and Biggio are both playing out of position. I mean, they're not moving Semien to third base now, but I think it's hurt Biggio's development all around. And I you know, that he's not the answer at third base. They got a lot of guys in the outfield, so he's not going to be a regular there batting 200. And I think it's too bad that his potential is not being seen, because he got a wonderful swing. They're all going to
good eye, yeah.
Down the right field line, but at this point he's a detriment at the plate and in the field.
All right, we got to take a break, but we started talking about specifics with the Blue Jays. I got a bunch of others I want to quiz you guys on. We'll take the quick break and come back with more. Bob Elliott, Dave Hodge with us back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, Dave Hodge, Bob Elliott around this table, visually speaking. Let's address some of the other things that have happened here. We talked a bit about Biggio. It's becoming dangerous to not talk about Guerrero and his performance. We were, disappointed with his, in a general sense, with his first couple of years. Thought this kid was going to come in and be, Hank Aaron right away. And didn't know whether he was going to have a defensive position. A lot of people thought he was destined for the DH spot, maybe even by now. They put him at first base, which is about as close as you can get, Mr. Elliott, to hiding a guy. But he has been really good defensively at first base. Or am I nuts?
I would say he had a bad, he had a shaky first 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever. But he's been very good lately and at playing first base defensively. And I think there's no question about the bat. The bat is not what we saw last year. It's not what we saw 2 years ago. He looks like the real deal for sure.
I was glad to see him hit a homer last night, because I really think that the three home run game was followed by, let's call it, a slump.
One for 15 or something.
Yeah. That was starting to be a problem until last night. And I also think this idea that, he's not going to see good pitches and he can just go ahead and take a walk. Fine. It's good to do that. Don't swing at the bad stuff like your dad might have done and hit a lot of it. But he was in a funk there for a while, and last night, to see a ball go out of the park, hitting to right field, looked pretty good. The Jays are obviously at their best when he's leading them offensively, and when a week ago, they scored 10 runs, and he didn't have a hit, 0-for-5. Now that's both good and bad. That's good if you can score 10 runs and get nothing from Guerrero, but it's bad that you get nothing from Guerrero. So he has to be their offensive leader. And as long as he is, yes, John, I think they can be in the playoffs.
I've heard hitting coaches say that the toughest at bat in baseball is the one after you hit a ball 380 feet, because you're trying to hit the next one 794 feet. And I think, Guerrero had the three home run game, and I think David's right. Then he just went into, I'm going to hit everything. He got out of his zone or a comfort area and was swinging for Tampa or whatever.
Well, he was getting the ball. He was getting the ball to the shortstop on two bounces a lot of times, and or striking out or walking. And he's got to be hitting for power, but. You've seen the potential. The other the hype that a lot of these Blue Jays arrive with reminds me a lot of the Leafs and how people have said, these guys can't match the publicity that comes with them because everybody's going to be great if the Leafs signed them or traded for them or whatever. And then, they wind up playing on defense and get booed and leave town. All these Jays have arrived with a lot of fanfare. And is Nate Pearson, was he ever, or will he ever be as good as he was supposed to be? Like, for the future, he was going to be the ace of the staff. Well, he's had a lot of injuries. We've never seen, certainly at the major league level, any indication that Nate Pearson could put it all together. But we were told that, you know, he was the next big thing. Now they got another guy in Buffalo named Alek Manoah, who is, you know, you're hearing the same thing about him. He is as raw a rookie as you can get. And he could be starting a game for the Jays in a couple of weeks. Who knows? I wish they would, you know, tone down. Alejandro Kirk was, you know,
nobody.
He was going to solve all the hitting problems at the catcher. Well, he had a couple of homers in one game, but we didn't see enough of him to match all that we were expecting. And this, you know, Biggio, Gurriel, you know, you can go down the list of players that are going to be great. You know, listen to the telecast and hear that, you know, they will figure it out. Maybe, but I'm not certain of that.
I'm curious about both the Manoah and Pearson. What would you, both the Elliott and Hodge, what would you be doing with these two guys right now? Elliott, you first.
Well, I forget who showed it the other night, whether it was Tabler or Showman, but when Pearson threw the ball, when he let go of the ball, his head was over here. And so, like, I mean, if Michael Jordan's practicing hoops in the gym and the hoop is right there, he's going to look there, right? He's not going to look over here. So, I mean, that's one problem. If you're not going to hit the plate if you're not looking at it, or hit the catcher's glove, rather. And the other guy, Manoah, the thing, I have a real problem with this, like, bring him up. He had 7 starts last year, or in pro ball, excuse me, all at Vancouver until this year. That you better be right. You're going to bring a guy that young up and put him in there. You know, I think the Pearson kid, I had lots of good reviews on draft day about him. College JUCO pitcher, mature and can handle himself. Now, I don't know if it was nerves the other night or if there's something going on, like he's been hurt a couple of times, as David said, but I think he'll get it back. I would leave the other guy at Buffalo but there's no such thing as patience anymore. Like everybody's in a hurry, you know, like nobody pumps the brakes.
I get that they, especially under these circumstances, they need somebody to start a game and they don't have anybody. And so they got to bring somebody to start a game in Houston. That's one of the problems. Hey, Nate, you know, face these guys, Bregman and Brantley and Yuli Gurriel. And, you know, they may win the American League, the Astros, without banging garbage cans. So that was a tough assignment for him, but you can need somebody to start a game. But I would say Pearson and Manoah are untouchable until you know they're ready, and they need innings, lots of them, in Buffalo. And, you know, Manoah keeps striking out 12 guys every 6 innings, then eventually you're going to want to see him, but not yet. And I don't think Nate Pearson has shown anybody this season or last that he's ready to be in a major league rotation.
We only have a few minutes left. I had something to say about Pearson, but I'll let that go. The Springer situation, is there a chance we won't see this guy play until well into June, maybe even beyond that?
If that's what it takes to make sure he's healthy, then I would say yes. Again, patience. There is a lack of it, and you know, he really adds to the lineup. You know, you get to the 6, 7, 8, 9 with the Jays, and you know, you're going like this these days. But if you can put Springer at the top and move everybody down one, that adds a whole lot. But it's no good if you know, he's going to be there for a few games and then be on the injured list again. So They have to be sure. He has to be sure that he can play center field mostly every day, or you're not going to see him until then. And I'm fine if he's ready to see him, and I'm fine not to see him if he's not ready, because they're making a big mistake, one they've already made, then they shouldn't do it again.
Robbie Ray with another good performance last night. A guy who his big flaw was his inability to throw strikes from time to time, is throwing lots of strikes, Elliot. Are you comfortable now with the top three in the Blue Jays rotation?
Ryu, somebody sent me an email last week. They said, how much better is Ryu than Jimmy Key? And I said, no, I said, Jimmy Key laps him. You know, Jimmy Key had eight 200 inning seasons, eight seasons of 30 or more starts. The most Ryu's ever had is 192 innings. And I think he had one season at 30 starts. But like he pitches six innings a week, period. That's what they're getting at him, you know. So I think he's this is the seventh week of the season tonight. Oh, starting the seventh week, and he's at 32 innings. I think I know he's had a DL since, and he's not Jimmy Key. I know I live in the past, but
well, and that's part of the equation here. You have to accept, as we talked about earlier, that times have changed. But they're not going to let that guy stay out there.
But so many guys have dropped. He's the best left-hander. I've heard that. He's the best left-hander in the franchise. I mean, I don't even know if he's Mike Flanagan. We'll see.
Well, Mike Flanagan was briefly a Toronto Blue Jay, I think.
Yeah.
But now that Ray has avoided the walks, Bob, he needs to keep the ball in the park. And a good way to do it is not to throw a fastball to Marcelo Zuna on an 0-2 pitch. That was a television moment, John. I don't know if you watched it last night, but Dan and Buck mocked Marcelo Zuna's inability to hit anything that Robbie Ray threw. And the 0-2 pitch came in as a fastball and left the park about as fast, well, faster than Marcelo Zuna could ever run. Whoops, you know, like, do not do that when you got this guy swinging at pitches in the dirt, throw him a fastball right down the middle. I don't know who the real Steven Matz is. I think, you know, when talking about the rotation, we gotta wait and see, because those first four wins made everybody in baseball say, how can that be? Right. And I think we have to see more of him.
Well, that's a good point. Everybody remember the name Jerry Garvin?
Yeah.
Jerry Garvin went 5-0 in his debut in the major leagues with the Toronto Blue Jays and couldn't break a pane of glass with a fastball. I think it was in the high 70s, maybe low 80s.
Well, they had a good PA announcer that back then, didn't they?
They had a great one. Yeah. World class guy. Time is our enemy. We could chat.
Paul Morris was doing the Jays too.
Bite me. We are out of time, I am told, and that is invariably the dilemma with this group, but we will do this again, I hope. We wish you all good health. Stay safe. Stay away from the water, Hodge.
No, this is to Shannon. If the Jays are in the playoffs, I need to be here, and we need to continue this discussion.
That's fine.
If they're not, you know my number, but you don't have to use it.
If the Jays are in the playoffs, maybe Dave will be there.
Hosting the Yankees in a wild card game. There you go. I'm going to be real specific here.
Okay.
Get ready to go to Buffalo. Bob Elliott, Dave Hodge, our guest today. We'll come back and wrap it up after these messages. Our thanks to Dave Hodge and Bob Elliott for joining us on the program. Some final thoughts, Shannon, in 90 seconds or less?
Every time we got on a roll, somebody brought up a guy from the 80s.
Well, there's some truth in that, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Get off my lawn.
Well, I know there's some get off my lawn stuff in there, but if you put it in context, how do you explain the Ryans and the Clemenses as compared to the way pitchers and players are being treated today? How do you explain that they should be fitter, in better shape, and more injury-free with all the money they're spending, and that the opposite is happening? Something is amiss here.
I just think that the players, and rightly so, are so protective of their own health because they're making so much money and they don't want to risk not necessarily this contract, but the next one.
Well, then pay them less money, damn it. And find guys that can only throw 84 miles an hour, but can pitch till Tuesday.
Well, we've talked about this. That's why Theo Epstein's back in the commissioner's office trying to fix the game that he kind of ruined.
Yeah, well, good luck to that. We got to get out of here. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you again tomorrow.